Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 112. I am Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd on this Friday is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Friday. Happy 1st of June.
Happy 1st of June, Dave. Do you know what score it is? Because J.R. Smith apparently does not. That's one of the worst blunders. I think a league on let kind of thing.
I don't know. If you watched that interview with him last night, he claims that he thought he knew what the score was. LeBron evidently during that post-game press conference really didn't even want to go into what the supposed mindset was of J.R. Reed, but obviously, I mean, that picture, they say a picture says 1,000 words sometimes, and that picture of LeBron with his hands stretched out, kind of saying, "What in the heck were you thinking?" At the end of the regulation period, there pretty much tells it all. But hey, without a doubt, I think the Cavaliers let one slip away there. They obviously didn't stay disciplined late or in overtime as well too, so there you go. And I'm obviously not a big basketball fan, but I do watch it at this time of the year when it gets into the playoffs as well. And obviously in hockey, the Capitals and the Vegas Golden Knights are tied one each, and I think that series resumes on Saturday in Washington, so be interesting to see how that series continues on. The Steelers have now wrapped up week 2 of their OTAs, a total of 6 practices, and in NASCAR they like to say the car was running good until the engine blew up. The Steelers OTAs were going great until a couple of injuries took place this past week, and we're two guys that I think we it was easy to kind of be excited about this offseason. One being tackle Gerald Hawkins, who reportedly suffered a torn quad in a non-contact drill. And the second player to get injured was tight end Jake McGee, guy that spent last season on the Steelers practice squad. And he looks like it's going to be an Achilles with him. The Steelers have not confirmed these moves. Obviously, they don't have to. We'll see if there's any moves made on the transaction wire either later today or probably early next week. We'll get into what those moves might be here in a little bit. But, boy, I may have jinxed Hawkins, Alex, because I wrote, we've written quite a bit about him, I think, this last week. And this is a guy that evidently was having a good week of OTA practice. And, boom, now looks like he's gone for the season.
Looks like it. And not only was it just a good set of OTA practices based on what others have said, but Ramon Foster said that the day before he got hurt, Hawkins did, that he had his best practice ever, according to Ramon Foster. So a guy that, was a critical year 3 for him, was injured his rookie year, sporadic play time last year. This would have been a big chance for him after losing Chris Hubbard. And now it looks like he's going to be done for the year. I mean, he could still, I guess, be an IR to return candidate because you don't have to declare anymore, but that would probably seem unlikely, and the season could very well be done for Gerald Hawkins.
Yeah, and for him to even qualify to be IR, IR to return, he has to be on that initial 53-man roster. So,
right.
Are you going to really carry him that long? Now, the thing is with him, I think I need to double check. I think Gerald Hawkins has a split salary related to injury. So what that means is if he ultimately lands on IR, which he should, one would think, then you know, the Steelers get a little bit of discount as far as a split salary goes with him, save you know, maybe a couple hundred thousand dollars, and maybe not that much, but they will save a little bit against the cap with him going on IR. Now, I do not know if you I do not think he's eligible to go straight to IR right now. I think that's one of those rules that IR doesn't open up until, like, you know, after the third week of the preseason. So they might, and you know, I know the Steelers were able to move Ryan Shazier to reserve PUP, and I don't know why that was allowed that early in the offseason. Maybe it's because it was you know, because of practices not yet starting and all that kind of stuff. So I don't think Gerald Hawkins is a candidate to go to reserve PUP to save a roster space right now. So in short, I think the Steelers are going to have to carry Gerald Hawkins on their offseason roster all the way up until you know, week three of the preseason. There, I'll double check that. Don't you know? Don't anybody quote me on that, but I think that's the way it's going to have to work with him, because I'm with you. I don't think he's going to be IR to return candidate. You know, unless they think he can get, you know, have surgery now. And look, I mean, it's still early, so maybe that you know, maybe the thing is, they don't have to rush that move. I don't think, in my opinion, they could have him have surgery right now, leave him on the 90-man roster when they get closer to, you know, the start of the regular season, then they can make the decision that, hey, this guy might be able to return later on in the year, so we'll just put him on IR and hope that he can be a designated to return player. Obviously, we're a long way away from that, and the most obvious thing with him is he's not going to be ready by the start of the regular season or by the middle of the season, and that means, you know, Chukwuma Okorafor, the team's second of two third-round draft picks this year. Sounds like he's going to be rushed into service here.
Yeah, so much for the redshirt year, because Okorafor was a guy that was billed as raw. It was only 6 years of football, you know, was born in Africa, grew up playing soccer, came, I don't think started playing football until he came to the States, I think his freshman year of high school, sophomore year of high school. But, you know, that acceleration is going to have to be accelerated because, you know, he's going to be a next man up, and it's very likely that Okorafor is going to log some snaps this year. Even if it is only at that left tackle spot, if they have enough confidence in Matt Filer to play, you know, right tackle, I mean, we'll have a good discussion on how exactly they're going to use Matt Filer. But, you know, bottom line, there's a very good chance he's going to get some playing time this year. So it's up to Munchak and Sean Sarrett to really work with him and for his own personal development. You know, he's a third-round pick, though, so the expectations are going to be high.
You know, back when they spent a third-round pick on him, I thought, kind of scratching my head, thinking, wow, you know, you got Gerald Hawkins there, you got a guy in Matt Filer. You know, couldn't you gone another direction there, maybe an edge rusher? But, you know, you never know how these things are going to play out, and I guess that's why you have to take, I mean, the best player that you, assuming it's not close and it's, you know, a close grade to a more or a need at another position there, this is a good example of why sometimes if you have a guy rated high on your board, you got to take him.
Yeah, you know, I think you've said it before, Dave. It's funny how these things have a way of working themselves out. And we were talking, I think, last time about, you know, how many offensive linemen are they going to keep? Is there an odd man out? Are they going to keep nine? I mean, the decision might, you know, be made for them a little bit now. I mean, you had an interesting perspective on Jake Rogers, but, you know, they could very easily just keep eight, not have to make a decision, and just hope that the group they have is solid.
Well, I think more than anything, not that he probably wasn't already, but Matt Filer's Filer's looking like a lock right now, right?
Yeah, you have your five starters. Your backups will be Okorafor, Finney, and Filer. And if someone else plays well enough to get onto the roster, great. If not, I think you're very comfortable with those eight because the versatility that those guys are going to have.
The only question now, I think, with Filer, we've seen him play some right tackle. We've seen him play some guard. Right now, I think he's a better guard than he is a tackle. And we, you know, a few weeks ago, we heard him already taking snaps at the center position. It sounds like they're trying to make him the new Chris Hubbard, if you will. But I mean, there's a lot to, we still have to see a lot. I want to see a lot more out of him as a tackle, and the other question is can he play on left tackle? You know, we've seen, you would think, look, you're able to play right tackle. And David Todd and I got into a little bit of talk about this, about players switching sides, and I meant to get to this point in that podcast, but failed to. I remember several years ago when Flozell Adams was signed, and him talking about how big of a difference it is. You know, Flozell spent obviously most of his, really pretty much all of his career, I think, playing left tackle with the Dallas Cowboys. And when he comes over to the Steelers, has to play right tackle. That was a little bit of an interesting process for him, you know, I guess because of the muscle memory alone, playing up most of his career there at left tackle there. So people just think, well, you just go over to the other side. It's not that big of a deal, but it really is. And in fact, David DeCastro, when talking about Okafor, I think yesterday admitted that, it's another position. So, learning one position is hard enough. Learning two is doubly hard.
Absolutely. I remember those Flozell Adams comments. He said it was like writing with your other hand. If you were a left-handed writer, try writing with your right hand at a moment's notice. It's not as simple as just, take a couple reps and then you'll be good. So, the other thing with Filer, just I don't think he's played really left tackle before. I think it's kind of the one spot I don't remember him getting really reps at. He's done on right tackle, he's done guard spots. We hear him getting work at center. I just don't think he's gotten many reps at left tackle. So I don't, unless they do something like, because it is going to be so much on a core force plate to try to play both tackle spots, given how raw he is, I know that they treasure positional flexibility, but maybe they just keep a core four really concentrated on the left tackle spot, have Filer play right tackle, and kind of just have that backup left tackle spot go to a core four instead of making him learn both and trying to put Filer on the left side too.
And look, right after Chooks was drafted, Mike Munchak talked about how, we hope he becomes, right left tackle capable, this, that, and the other. You might be right. It might be better to – I'd rather have a master of one than a master mm-hmm. – than a jack of trades and a master of none. But with that said, we expect to hear him getting time and talking about Chooks. We expect to hear him getting both time at both spots throughout the rest of the offseason, right?
Yeah, just because that's how it goes for any of these guys, especially if you're a backup. You're going to play all over the place. The other thing with Filer, though, is just, there are only so many practice reps to go around. It's great to get him time at center, but if this guy needs to be the swing player for everything – there are only so many reps that you can get. So, you have to be a little careful of not putting too much on his plate and stretching him too thin either. Obviously, he's kind of been in the system for a while now, has a little bit of game day experience, so that helps him. But, I just have a little concern about that too, trying to get him to do everything. That's a very tall task.
I wrote about Jake Rogers yesterday, and I think this injury – obviously he moves up in the pecking order a little bit. How much, we don't know. And will the Steelers end up keeping 8 offensive linemen or 9? Probably odds are good that they might keep 9. They kept 9 last year. They kept 9 the year prior to that. Now, you could argue that they kept 9 the year prior to that because Cody Wallace was injured. But regardless, they're going to keep at least 8. And you can make – and whether or not they keep 9 – probably depends on how the rest of the roster shakes out. You got to remember that you got to keep 7 guys on that inactive list anyway. And the guy with Rogers, who has been in, I don't want to say high demand, but he hasn't been on the street very long since being drafted way back in 2015 in the 7th round by the Atlanta Falcons. This is a guy the Steelers thought enough of to bounce on and off of the practice squad last year. He is a guy that as soon as the Houston Texans waived Rodgers back in right after the draft, that the Steelers wasted no time claiming him off waivers. Do you remember much about the snaps that Jake Rogers played last year in preseason? Because I don't.
Yeah, here's the thing with Jake Rogers is that if he wants to make this team, really the best path for him to do so is that he's going to be the second team, I assume, right tackle. And I'm not positive on that, but the Hawkins injury is going to open things up because the thing with him last year was that he ran third team the entire preseason. And even with a lot of the starters getting rest and guys getting days off, that's just a limited snap count. You just don't have the opportunity to play. You get in the game action, you're getting a drive, maybe two at the end of a game. I mean, it's just the opportunity is not there. So if you can get elevated to the second team and get reps there, you're going to get a lot more of an opportunity to show the coaches what you can do, and that's going to really give you the chance to make a push for the 53, or failing that, at least bounce back onto the practice squad. So if he can get that second team right tackle spot, they're going to kick Filer to guard. That would be ideal for Jake Rogers because he needs the reps. He just didn't get many last year.
And look, I mean, I think Filer needs some snaps. Here's one thing about Rogers as well, too. You want to talk about a guy that's position flexibility, or not that that means anything. I mean, I could call myself a I could call myself a safety because I played safety or safety and cornerback in high school. It doesn't mean I could play safety and cornerback. I mean, but the fact of the matter is with Rogers is, you know, going back to his college days at both Washington State and Eastern Washington, he played both guard spots and he played both tackle spots. So, you know, is that something that, that kind of works in his favor? Do we expect him to see? Do we expect to see him play any guard spot moving forward? Probably not. I mean, it's probably all going to be tackle for him, especially with that length there. And I'm trying to go back and remember. I don't know if you have the charting up in front of you from last preseason there. I forgot to look at it yesterday, but I know Rogers played 9 snaps in the preseason opener, and he probably played about that many the rest of the preseason there. So he probably logged, I'm guessing, around 50 snaps, and I would dare guess that most of those were at right tackle.
Yeah, I don't have the chart in front of me. That sounds about right. Like I said, the snaps are super limited. I wouldn't expect him to be at guard. I mean, maybe with this injury, you know, maybe if they want to really kind of test Rogers out. But I expect him to be at both left and right tackle. But again, if he can get on that second team, I mean, I don't really have mapped out kind of my thoughts of how each line is going to work post Hawkins injury. But if he can get on that second team right tackle spot, that's going to be huge for him.
He played 10 in the second preseason game, talking about Rogers, so that's 19 snaps. Against the Colts, he played, what did he play against the Colts?
I'm guessing little in that third game.
Probably little.
I gotta drive.
Yeah, I'm not finding him on the list here, so maybe he sat that one out. But no, he played. No, that's the other Rogers. I'm not seeing him on here, so maybe he did sit that game out for some reason. Regardless, it'd be worth going back and maybe re-examining his snaps. I mean, who else? I mean, who else did potentially this injury by Hawkins help? I mean, Rogers and who else?
I think the most talented of the kind of beyond the top eight now is Patrick Morris, the center from TCU, the undrafted guy that came in that really impressed me. But the issue with Patrick Morris is that, you know, he's an interior guy. He's a guard and a center, and they got enough of those with Finney and Filer. So there's not a real compelling reason to keep a ninth, you know, interior or a ninth offensive lineman that's an interior guy on the roster. You'd rather have, you know, a tackle capable guy, unless Morris just blows you away and you feel like you're going to lose him at some point. So I think he's the most talented guy, but I don't think there's a fit for him to make the 53.
Yeah, and Filer, you know, I want to see. We'll see if we see more Filer at tackle during the preseason. But look, I was really impressed with the way he played at guard last year during the preseason, and maybe he's done that enough now. And he also filled in for David DeCastro in that regular season finale against the Browns and represented himself well there. Maybe they've seen enough of that now and say, all right, we know you can play some guard. Maybe he gets the bulk of his work at, as you said, right tackle here during the preseason, but definitely something to watch. True or false, Jake Rogers will make the 53-man roster?
False. I just don't think he's good enough to make it.
All right. So you, if you were a betting man right now, would it be 8 offensive linemen?
Yep, I think it'd be 8. I think you have your 8 right now.
All right, I'm going to go directly opposite from you. I'm going to go they keep 9, and Rogers is one of them, of course. I'm afraid to throw out there that these things have a funny way of working themselves out, like I did. I think a Twitter user said I used that during the last show talking about Hawkins, and lo and behold, we have something working itself out there. The other guy that got injured, Jake McGee. I think I had him on my initial 53 this year. Alex, did you have him on yours?
I didn't, but I was excited to watch him because he had a really solid camp last year coming in middle of the training camp after Scott Orndorff got hurt and earned some rare praise from Mike Tomlin. And, you know, while he wasn't a flashy player, he was a good blocker and someone that had a reliable pair of hands. And now to lose him for the season, and this sounds like a definite season-ending injury with a torn Achilles, that's a big bummer. And the tight end depth was not great, so that hurts even more.
It certainly does. And this is a guy, look, I mean, there was no guarantee he was going to beat out Grimble this year, but I think at right now, or judging by what took place, you know, last season, and of course, obviously, we only saw McGee play during the preseason there, but I think he was the better blocker of the two and really potentially the better special teams player of the two. And when you're talking about a number three tight end, you know, I understand why people are saying, you know, why people want more Grimble, but I mean, Grimble is what he is. You know, I mean, are we really expecting to see a lot of Grimble barring injury in 2018 outside of a second tight end, blocking tight end or on special teams? I think the answer to that question is no. So, look, I mean, McGee really is what he is at this point, but, you know, I think a little bit more well-rounded than, say, Grimble is. But the fact of the matter is it doesn't matter anymore because with this torn Achilles, that's going to do it for him. And as far as what the Steelers will likely end up doing with him, I think you could just waive him injured. He should clear waivers unless the Patriots want to pull one of the things that they like to do, which I couldn't imagine them doing with a guy like McGee. But waiving McGee injured, let him clear waivers and land back on IR with a split salary. So I expect that's what will happen with him, either as early as today, Friday, or early next week, whenever they find another tight end to sign. And at this point, speaking of tight end, because the depth of the tight end depth wasn't all that great, you know, I mean, you would think they're going to at least go out and get another tight end, you know, maybe one that was with them during the rookie minicamp or another young tight end. You wouldn't expect a veteran type to be brought in, right?
No, I think just going to be a futures type of guy most people haven't heard of. I know you mentioned Brett Thompson, who was in rookie minicamp. That's a common thread, whether you now or you get in a training camp. Often guys that didn't get a contract out of rookie minicamp circle back around. We've seen that multiple times before. But yeah, it's a bummer. McGee, I think, was the best blocker of any of the tight ends, which is kind of crazy to say. And you know, was niche, but very good at that niche. And you know, could at least, you know, compete with Grimble if it was an injury somewhere else. You know, that would have provided an opportunity. But now you have a guy like Farrah McKeever, who's a vastly different guy from Jake McGee. He's not a blocker. He was asked to block a lot, but he's not particularly skilled at it. But he's a 6'7", 230-pound guy that played receiver, played defensive line, had a pick six against Syracuse, blocked punts, you know, and then transferred to, Florida Atlantic or Florida International, I forget which, from NC State, and had a good season last year. So that's a guy that can get a lot more burn now and, you know, has a chance to develop on the practice squad.
All right. You know, keep your fingers crossed that no more injuries, you know, having to dedicate time to that. I mean, look, these things happen. And I think the Steelers have been luckier than most teams the last few years, right, when it comes to injury. I mean, you just never know. I mean, for non-contact, too, you know, that's what drives you, I think, more insane about these things is non-contact injuries.
Yeah, they're frustrating, but that's just how most of the severe injuries that happen this time of year are non-contact. They are torn ACLs that generally happen, you know, without someone initiating contact. And I mean, it happens around the league, and the Steelers still have their stars intact. So stars aren't there. We can get into that. That's why they're intact. But just hoping for good health the rest of the way.
Yeah, that's a good time to segue right now into a couple guys aren't there. Antonio Brown. I forget what's the tally. Ben's missed like the last five, and AB's missed the last four. Does that sound right? I mean, they've had six practices. We know Ben was at the first one.
AB was at the first two.
Yeah, and AB, and then no sign of either one since then. I get it. I mean, it's not like the offense is changing much this year. Bell's not there, but I mean, these guys can get hung by the tongue from their own previous contents or quotes. You know, with especially AB being the most recent one saying, you know, the only way you get better is to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he doesn't show up. You know, look, these are – in fact, I'm a fan now of calling these, instead of OTAs, VOTAs, because that's what they are. They're voluntary organized team activities, and not enough emphasis is put on voluntary until it meets your narrative, right?
Yeah, right. And these are, you know, like you said, they are truly voluntary. So I don't really care that much if they're not there. I think it's a very clear statement that this offense is not changing much. If Ben Chu is like, he can just take OTAs off and just be like, Randy, everything's the same, I'm leaving. He's apparently, I think it was a DD, someone said that he's on vacation with his family right now. AB's still in Pittsburgh. I saw him working out on his Instagram and Snapchat videos he likes to post. Again, I don't really care that they're not there. It's not a big deal. But, you know, like you said, when AB talks about, you know, you got to show up, you know, if you want to get better, you know, kind of chide Bell a little bit. And I think Ben, I'm trying to find Ben's quotes, but, you know, Ben was talking about how Pouncey would kill him if he didn't show up. And, you know, Brady is fine. He can take it off, but I don't want to, you know, take any time off. I don't want to be away from the team. And then he literally does this that the next day. You know, there's just an obvious hypocrisy to it. So if you want to take the time off, I mean, that's fine. I get it. But don't talk about how much you want to be here and how important it is to be here when you leave the next day.
Right. I mean, look, we got used to, you know, Troy Polamalu didn't show up hardly any during the OTAs during his career. And, you know, that wasn't a big deal. Look, he had a totally different way that he likes to get his body ready for the season as well, too. I'm not using that as an excuse. It's just a fact. He was more into the isometrics and all like that with Marinovich. Mr. Marinovich, Todd Marinovich's father, was all into that kind of training, and that's how he used to, you know, get himself ready for the season. And obviously, you know, having the same defensive scheme for all those years, it was. And look, I mean, David DeCastro, in the comments he made yesterday talking about those guys being there, is not a big deal because, you know, OTAs is more about getting in shape and the reps going to the younger guys. If that's the case, just tell the veterans to stay away, right? I mean, It looks better on paper, right?
Well, I think, you know, I get that it's more for the younger guys and guys new to the system than it is, you know, AB or Ben. I mean, that's obvious, but it's still nice for the veterans to be there to communicate with the young guys. The young guys are learning from you. They're watching you work. They're talking to you. They're helping you with the offense and just part of that team bonding experience that, you know, gets referenced a lot this time of year. Again, it's not a big deal. I'm not, you know, once camp starts, literally no one's going to care about who was and wasn't at OTAs, but, you know, like I said, they just talk about how important it is to be there. And for AB, you know, he never misses this stuff. He went ahead his contract issue. You know, he missed one practice. It's kind of a mini statement. Then he showed up for the rest and he got his deal. So I think it was Aditi that said, you know, AB's not there because Ben's not there and AB doesn't want to practice if the starting quarterback isn't.
I was going to hit on that.
Yeah, it's weird.
I hope that's not a direct quote.
I don't think it's a direct quote. I think it was just some sort of implication from whatever.
Well, that's bad on her part if that did not come out of his mouth.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know exactly what the sourcing is behind. I mean, it wasn't in quotations. It was just, I mean, we can maybe find the exact tweet, but it just, that's what it said. It was just a statement. I guess it was someone
right,
else related to
it.
You
got to admit, and look, I mean, Aditi, you know, Aditi sends me messages here and there and tweets at me sometime. I think I have a good relationship with her, but, you know, things like that are kind of, why not, if that's a quote, why not put it in quotes and report on that instead of throwing it out? Because, I mean, we don't know, right? I mean, is she insinuating that she's, to me, that sounds like she's heard him reference that before. Is that the way you take it?
My guess is that it's coming from somebody else and that wants to be anonymous, obviously, and that she's just, you know, paraphrasing or just tying up whatever statement she received.
And that's dangerous, right?
Yeah, again, I don't know if it's true or not. Here's the tweet. This is from about a day ago from a DD. Marquise Pouncey said Ben Roethlisberger has been on family vacation, thus his absence from OTAs. Multiple Steelers said Antonio Brown's absence is only because of his preference to work with a starting quarterback. Players uniformly said this isn't holding back any install of new Randy Feitner's offense. Okay, so she's saying that multiple Steelers have said it. So there's the attribution.
And I hope that's not true. I hope that's not the only reason, you know.
I think it's a bad look if that is the real reason.
Right. I mean, look, just say you don't want to you want to work out. And nobody's questioning AB's work ethic, but to say, yeah, I just don't want to be there because Ben's not there and he's the only one. Because, God forbid, Ben should go down injured, it might have been nice to get a couple of reps with Landry Jones or Mason or whoever ends up being the number two. It just looks bad. It's bad optics.
Yeah, I mean, what's going to, you know, in training camp when Ben gets days off and Ben routinely gets like one day a week off, AB's still practicing, right? In middle of the season when Ben gets, I think Ben usually gets a day off during the week or two, even two sometimes, AB still practices. So, you know, you're making yourself better. Even if Ben's not there, you can still improve. And, of course, you're going to be there and working with some of the young guys that, you know, once the season starts, not going to have much of an opportunity to throw to you. And that's going to make them better as a result. So, again, not the biggest deal in the world. Once camp starts, no one's going to care about this. But if that's the real reason, I don't think that's a great reason.
And what about the whole iron sharpens iron thing? Artie Burns needs some sharpening still.
Yeah, for sure. They had great battles. AB was just talking about how excited he was to get back with Burns and compete. Burns had a great camp last year, and he really did a good job against AB. I know it didn't always translate, but that's how guys get better. So that's a great point, Dave.
Let's see. What else is going on at OTAs? It doesn't sound like Juju and Cameron Hayward are practicing, and the assumption is minor injuries with those two guys. Let's hope that's all it is. Mandatory mini camp will be here soon enough, and you know, I guess we'll see when it comes to those guys. But I mean, obviously, it's not a big deal, and David DeCastro said as much as I referenced just a little while ago about, you know, better time to get in shape. These reps are for the younger guys. There would be some pushback, I'm sure, in CBA negotiations, but why not just have two weeks of mandatory mini camp? And one less week of OTAs, but make the OTAs where it's only the third year players and less, you know, be able to attend. To me, that would make a lot more sense.
I mean, I'm okay with the system now. I think it's still important for those guys to get reps. What if you're a new guy? What if you're Morgan Burnett and you're new to the team and you need those reps? You can't miss out on the opportunity. So I'm okay with the system now. Injuries, unfortunate as they are going to happen. I think you can't legislate them out of the game entirely, and you just have to be smart about how you manage reps, and guys have to take care of their body and show up in shape. That's, you know, a big starting point. Obviously, doesn't prevent things like a torn Achilles, but prevents a lot of the soft tissue injuries that can trip guys up. So I'm fine with the system. I think it's tough enough as it is to get the reps that players need. And if anything, it should go in the other direction. But I'm okay with the current, you know, layout.
Javon Hargrave was on Steelers Nation Radio after the team's Thursday practice, which was number 6 of 2018, talking about what he did during the offseason, and the main push with him was just eating a little bit different. Now, mind you, he has not totally abandoned the eating the burgers and fries, but he's mixing in more fish and vegetables. And I think I've seen one picture of him, if that. And, you know, supposedly he looks a little bit better cut this off season, but at the same time, he wants everybody to know that he's really the same weight. He thinks he's a little bit quicker than he was previously. He also, you know, talked about new defensive line coach Carl Dunbar and how he's learning, you know, several new things from him. But at the same time, he's not forgetting probably the one thing that we tend to talk about the most when we talk about John Mitchell. And, you know, outside of John Mitchell, when a new guy comes in, Mitchell breaking them down like a shotgun and putting them back together. Mitchell always seems to preach to, or does always preach to these guys about running to the football. And I thought it was funny that really the final quote that Hargrave really had to say of meaningful value that was in that interview on Thursday was, in college, I didn't even know what running to the ball was. I was just trying to make the play. Now that's all I know right now, and that's something you can't take from me right now. So Mitchell gets through on that aspect, doesn't he?
Yeah, and I wrote about that this morning because I saw that quote, and I think it resonated with me so much that, you know, you're seeing coaching in action. You're seeing what made John Mitchell such an effective coach. And while he was a tough love kind of guy, he was able to change a player's mindset. And you know, now Hargrave runs to the football just like Game Hayward, Stephon Tuitt. It's a culture thing in Pittsburgh. You know, Tuitt and Hayward learned it from guys like Kiesel and Aaron Smith. And it all, you know, starts with what John Mitchell taught in the first place when he got here a long time ago. So, you know, that's awesome to see. I pulled out some clips of Hargrave being able to chase after the football, make those plays. And, you know, I think Carl Dunbar has a similar philosophy in terms of running the football, a high-effort kind of player. You know, they're coaching. The way they coach is going to be different because Mitchell's a very much a tough-love guy. I think Ethan too has even talked about it, that Dunbar is more patient, a little bit more of a player's coach, I guess, so to speak. But the philosophies and the demands are going to be the same.
What do you see with Hargrave this season outside of base defense? Do you think he'll supplant Hayward or Tuitt, you know, a few snaps this year in sub package? How do you see him being used outside of base?
I think it's going to be similar to what it's been in the past. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I mean, he's been a rotational guy in nickel. Obviously, there's been some injuries, so that's created more of an opportunity. I think they also like Tyson Alualu and nickel, too. They're not going to replace either of them. You know, Hayward, Tuitt are your guys. They're getting paid as such. They have to be your best pass rusher, so they're going to get the large majority of any nickel opportunities. But I think it's more of a thing of, can Keith Butler find extra ways to stay in base, or at least play with three defensive linemen on the field, whether that is more of a 3-3-5 or rolling out some of the different personnel groupings that we saw last year that let Hargrave stay on the field more often. I think that's going to be his best chance of playing more snaps rather than him getting more of an opportunity in nickel, because I think it's going to be about the same as it has been.
And let's face it, last season is skewed, really the last two seasons are skewed, right? Hayward, you lost the final, what was it, five games or something?
Yeah, the
like
Dallas
that.
Game.
And really, didn't he suffer a hamstring injury like in week against the Jets? Wasn't that early in the season that Hayward was kind of nicked up too? And then if you look at last season, geez, I mean, between, obviously Tuitt missing a lot of time, right? That really kind of skewed a lot. Now, obviously, Tyson Alualu. Tyson is what he is. I thought Tyson was the perfect pickup when they signed him. But even so, he's just not a premier. He's not a premier pass rusher.
No, he's not. I mean, I think he's the weakest of those four: Hayward, Tuitt, Hargrave, and himself. But you know, I think they like him. They like the size, the length. He's able to get a push from the pocket. He is generally assignment sound, and I think he can finish the play. And that's the other issue is that some of these guys are having Tuitt, especially. But you know, it happens to everybody. They're not finishing these sacks, and they're missing out on a lot of opportunities to, you know, raise their sack total by three or four over the course of the season. And I think Lulu is a guy that can finish plays, and that's one reason why they like having him out there.
You know, we've talked and written about in the past about, you know, how much we would like to see Tuitt, and, you know, assuming both are healthy, Hayward and Tuitt both play. Now, in the past, those numbers have been extremely high percentage when healthy. But I mean, what's ideal with those two? 80%?
What's the question? What's considered high?
What's the ideal percentage of snaps Hayward and Tuitt play?
Yeah, I think about 80 is a nice number to have.
You know, when you talk about 1,000 let's say, 1,000 defensive snaps, and if each guy plays 80%, it's obviously 800, then that means you need 200 from each to get them off the field, right? So, you know, when you boil it down that way, that's a total of 400 snaps divided by 16 games. Well, what's the math on that?
Let me take my shoes off, as you might say. It's a 25 a game.
I mean, can they get guys like Hargrave and Alualu a combined 25 snaps a game? That seems a little high, doesn't it?
I don't know. I think you need to be able to do that. I think if you don't, then that depth isn't good enough. You know, if you think about that, that's an extra maybe 10 snaps a play. You throw in LT Walton as well, who can wear a lot of hats. You should be able to do that. If not, you got a big problem with your depth, and that's been an issue in the past with the Steelers.
Well, the most ideal situation is having a 35-10 lead in the fourth quarter.
Right. Take them off.
Of course, we can't have nice things like that as Steelers fans, right?
Right. Yeah, when was the last time that happened?
I mean, I'd even settle for 27-14. That's a big lead, right? But I mean, you know, look, I mean, make no mistake about it. You're paying Hayward and Tuitt. I mean, those guys are two of your top paid players, so it's not like you yank or in an ideal world you're yanking your outside linebackers off the field, you know, and only letting them play 80. I understand why, because you know there's more physical, just the nature of the position. You would like to see them get a few plays off, but I think 80% is about ideal, and it'd be interesting to see, you know, can Hargrave not only, if he does see those snaps, can he produce in those type of situations?
I think he can. I think he's shown it. You look at the Detroit game last year, you look at the Cleveland game week one, you've seen him be able to take over when he's one-on-one with centers. He's able to really have a lot of success, so you're going to kind of force teams to start to double and chip and pay good attention to him, because I think Hargrave does a great job winning one-on-one with his strength, his leverage, his hand use, the first step that he has. I think he's got some really rare traits for his body type and just the nature of the nose tackle position. So, yeah, I think he can produce. I don't have any doubt in my mind about that, to be honest with you.
Where is LT Walton in all this?
Wherever he has to be. You know, he's that kind of just versatile, a little Chris Hubbard-like. You know, if you need him at end, either spot for a couple snaps, do it. If you need him back up nose tackle, do it. He's not going to be much of a nickel guy, but, you know, he's not going to, I guess, kill you in terms of responsibility. He's going to be able to just kind of, you know, play his gap. But really just, you know, he's going to be a steady guy. He's going to be a high-conditioned guy, a high-effort guy. That's one of the top reasons why he got drafted. Kind of going back to that with Mitchell, the guys that are running the football, he's got great work ethic, and he's going to be just whatever you need him to do, he can provide.
Any reason to think right now that Walton is not going to make this 53?
I'd be pretty shocked if he didn't make it. I mean, you know, that sixth spot is wide open right now. Who knows if someone on this team's even going to be able to grab it? They could go outside the organization. So I don't know what scenario where Walton is at number five, DN gets pushed off. You know,
and really the two guys you would think are prime position to battle, actually three guys to battle for that number six would be Greg Gilmore, Joshua Frazier, and Daniel McCullers, right?
Yep, those are the three.
And you would expect one, at least one of those guys, to be number six. I mean, this team just does. It's been six forever and a day, right? I mean, there's no reason to think it's going to be seven. There's no reason to think it's going. I don't know. You could probably make an argument that it could potentially be five. It's just it's almost like the Steelers in the three quarterback role. You might as well go ahead and pencil in. They're going to keep only six defensive linemen.
Yeah, unless Dunbar has a different idea. I mean, obviously he's not making a decision on that, but maybe he's got a different comfort level and what he needs. I mean, you know, you could argue that, but I'm pretty confident saying it'll be six. And hopefully, you know, one of those three shows up. You know, that if you have to go outside the organization, that means, you know, none of those guys stepped up. And I think Gilmore can be a sleeper because I think he does have end and nose tackle versatility. You know, I think he played in a college system, and Frazier did too, but he played more snaps and in a system where you had to, you know, play the run traditionally. And, you know, but it depends. We'll see what Dunbar's evaluation of these guys are.
I thought Vance McDonald and Jesse James had a few interesting things to say this past week. If you missed any of that, go to SteelersDepot.com, and you can find articles on both those guys. In short, Vance McDonald, I think this offseason is huge for him. He obviously did not get that last year and was already behind the eight ball, if you will, of some magnitude. What that is, we don't know. But, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. If you miss all of OTAs, you miss all of training camp, you come in and you're trying to pick things up, you're trying to get on the same page with your quarterback, and then lo and behold, you have a back issue right out of the chute that cost you a game, and then you get on into the season, you suffer an ankle injury, you suffer a, what else do you have, a shoulder injury and a knee injury, and then basically we're getting excited about the playoff game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, in which McDonald caught 10 passes in that game for over 100 yards, and that's really all we have to hang our hat on right now when it comes to McDonald. But I'll still stand by the fact with McDonald, I liked the trade right when it happened, and I might be higher or willing to buy on him this year than most people are. Look, he's going to drop 7 footballs. Go ahead and write that down. I have accepted that. With enough pass targets, he's going to drop 7 footballs. But what can he do with the other targets his way? I think you wrote a little bit about a week and a half ago or so about how, the way to get him the football and get him out in space. Look, Jesse wants to talk about improving his yak. Good luck with that.
Not happening.
Okay. One guy who can't get you yak is Vance McDonald. This is a guy that I think should have the lion's share of the snaps in 2018 out of 11 personnel. How much two tight end sets we see, I don't know. But I know this. The Steelers offense was fine when McDonald was healthy, running out of 12 out of 2 tight end sets last year, so I'm fine with that. I think this could be a career year for Vance McDonald if he can stay on the field.
I'm with you. I was asked yesterday in my mailbag, who do I think, you know, rookie or vet could have a breakout year, and I went with Vance McDonald. And I think maybe the one most noticeable difference we'll see in Randy Feitner's offense compared to Todd Haley, maybe this is me putting the tinfoil on, but here's a quote that Jesse James had the other day, and I think the idea is that you're going to see Vance McDonald play in more space this year. He's not going to be used as much of a traditional inline guy. Jesse James says, we obviously have a little bit of different skill set. They like to use McDonald out wide a little bit, try to keep me interior most of the time, so we have some cool, unique sets that we'll be running. So, you know, could that be some stuff where you're getting McDonald more in the slot, split out wide? I think that Feitner is going to really take advantage of McDonald's kind of skill set and athleticism and get him, you know, out of just a traditional wide tight end spot. And I wrote about that, you know, it was mostly centered around his yak ability and the different route concepts that they can use Vance McDonald in to get him open and get him be able to make plays. So I think that's one thing I'm looking for the most, and we'll probably get a good feel for it right away, is moving McDonald around and not having him be as stagnant as he's been in the past.
For those listeners that used to listen, that have listened to the podcast dating back to like in the 70s, when David Todd and I used to do this show, you know, I've always been a huge fan of 12 personnel. If you have the right personnel to be able to run that. And several years ago, I talked about how in awe I was of like the Patriots when they had Patriots anytime post drafting of Gronk. You know, obviously with Aaron Hernandez and how they were able to use both those guys. But I mean, really fast forward past then, the Patriots have always been able to use, it seems like, a good combination or be able to use their 12 personnel to really take advantage of what the opposition does. And the fact of the matter is if you have the right tight end out there that you can either put on the end of the line of scrimmage and serve as a blocker, or you can flex out and take advantage of a matchup depending on what the defense throws out there across from you. It gives you a huge advantage, I think, and the Patriots are a great example of this, and that's why I pretty much have stopped talking about it for a few years now, because last year, even though McDonald just wasn't on the field enough last year, and B, he just wasn't able to get on the same page with Ben. But is this going to be the year that I get excited about seeing 12 personnel? Because let's not forget, there's a lot of high hopes with James Washington being your number three, as there should be, because he's a second round draft pick. But with that said, you can bring him along slowly. We're not expecting James Washington to log 50 snaps a game coming out of shoot, right?
I don't know, Dave. I think he's going to play a lot. I think he's going to play a lot because he's going to be that big part of that 11 personnel.
I expect that to happen as the season progresses.
Okay.
But maybe they'll prove me wrong. But he's supposed to be a deep threat. You know, he's supposed to be the guy that comes in and helps keep defenses honest. And here's the other thing that we really haven't talked a lot about just yet. I can't believe no one's really asked James Washington about this or any of the coaches about this. Why the hell was he only on the right side so much during college? it's almost. There's another guy that I criticized quite a bit for having lined up so much on one side during his college career, and that was Cordell Patterson. This is a guy James Washington, a lot smarter player. I'm not going to draw a comparison about not understanding the X's and O's, because I'm still a firm believer that Cordell Patterson, wherever he is, you better have a coloring book. Version of your playbook there for him to understand. It was quite obvious. Now James Washington did see an occasional snap on the other side, and I understand the whole spread offense and running quick and this, that, and the other, but, man, he's going to have to show that he can catch the football on the other side of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, he's got to prove a lot, and I'm not saying he's guaranteed anything. It's going to be all merit-based, as it always goes in Pittsburgh. But, I'm just saying, Juju was playing pretty quick last year, and he had to deal with Eli Rogers, Martavis Bryant. There was a deeper wide receiver unit last season, and I think the expectation is for Washington to play quite a bit right away. But I get your point, and I was going to bring it up that, if Washington struggles or there's an injury or whatever happens, maybe they use more 12 personnel and put McDonald as the de facto slot receiver instead of trying to force a guy that's not really ready for that, because they are pretty low on slot receivers right now. It's Juju, and then it gets kind of murky after that. If Eli Rogers gets brought back, that could add a guy, but you don't know what's going to happen. So I think to get to your point, I don't think they're going to use an abundance of 12 personnel this year because they're still going to be a base 11 personnel team. But can they do some different creative things? Knowing that Jesse James can be the inline wide tight end, that's going to give McDonald more flexibility, let him make more of an impact in the passing game.
And I would expect to see it more earlier in games and earlier during the season. That kind of stuff. And look, we've seen this team open up games with 12 and 13 personnel. quite a bit. Push 11 is still going to be there. 11 is the primary personnel of every team in the NFL, probably sans the Jaguars, right? And I'm not saying that. I just think that we could see 12 eat into a little bit this year, and how great would it be is if you have a guy like McDonald who gives that becomes that great mismatch against certain teams. Everything's about speed nowadays. We see the Steelers go out and get Edmonds and draft guys like Sean Davis because of the speed ability, the ability to match up against tight ends and stuff like that. Other NFL teams obviously are on to this as well too. But I guess going back to where we all started on this thing, I think Vance McDonald is a guy that can register 40 to 50 catches for you this year and get 11, 12 yards per reception for you and get you a few big plays. But with that, you're going to have to accept the fact that you're going to have 7 drops.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I think this could be, you could consider McDonald kind of an X factor in this offense to elevate this offense to another level. You know what you're going to get with guys like Juju and AB and Bell and Ben. But, can you get that extra piece, especially losing Martavis Bryant and Vance McDonald? And you're right. The big advantage to having the athletic tight end and you have your personnel is it keeps team in base. That's how you get Rob Gronkowski on Terrence Garvin, a couple of years ago. That's how you get the matchups that you want, by keeping teams in base, forcing linebackers to cover athletic tight ends, or forcing teams to roll a safety down to cover the tight end. That's going to limit their coverage ability. They're going to have to play a lot of single high, play a lot of man coverage. It's a win-win. It'll stress the defense. So absolutely, if they can run 12 personnel effectively, and I think that they're capable of that, it's going to give this offense another layer.
And make no mistake, early on in the season last year, too, they ran well out of 12 personnel when McDonald was on the field.
Yeah, he wasn't as bad of a blocker as I think he was kind of built to be.
And where do you chime in on the split David Todd and I talked about the other day? You seeing like a 60-40 split with McDonald having the lion's share there? Do you think it's going to be a little bit wider gap or maybe even a more towards the line of a 55-45?
Nah, I think 60-40 is about good. I'd probably say maybe 65-35. I think McDonald's going to be the guy. I think this is the year he's going to really separate himself again, obviously having the year under his belt, going through an offseason, hopefully with good health. So again, if we assume good health, I think it'll be like a 65-35 kind of split.
I have this data. I should be able to rattle it off if I know what we're talking about. I wonder how many snaps McDonald had out of 11 personnel last year.
Yeah, that's a good question. More as the year ended, I'm sure that last month is a good indication of where he's going to be this year.
Now, obviously, he missed, had the injuries. I mean, look, we talk about he missed, 5 or 6 games. You have to remember he missed chunks of, 2 others on top of it. So you had him for, half a season in reality there. I just think, really, that, you want to talk about an X-factor player. That he could be it.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you, and I think I have a good amount of confidence. Again, assuming good health, I think he can be an impact player, and I'm excited to see how Randy Featner is going to use him, maybe a little differently than Todd Haley used him in the past.
Jesse James is what he is, right?
Yeah, I think you've reached your ceiling with Jesse James. An adequate enough number two. I think he's improved in some areas of his game, the combative catches. Being a tough guy. Haley talked about the injuries he played through last year. And I don't think that gets enough, acknowledgement, but, he's going to be not going to be a yak threat. He'll be a decent, he'll be a good blocker, but, he's limited. He's your true traditional wide tight end. That's what makes him a number two, not a number one.
All right. Where do you come in on the new throwback jerseys? That leak ended up being right. Sometimes you wonder if these leaks are done on purpose or if it just, look, they're redesigning that website on Steelers.com. Me thinks it was a mistake. You can't make mistakes in today's today's internet age because somebody's gonna catch it and somebody else is gonna write about it.
You also can't have burner accounts. So Dave, heads up there, whatever burner account you're using.
Oh no! I David Todd is the one with all the burner accounts.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Not me. I only have blocked account. I only have backup accounts for when I'm blocked.
Those are like burner accounts.
I'm trying to separate the church from the state here.
Fair enough.
Where do you come in on the throwbacks? Which, by the way, back in the old days, Alex, we had to order our jerseys out of the Sears and Roebuck catalog. And imagine being in Pensacola, Florida, walking into a Sears at the age of 10 and asking them if they have any Steelers jerseys.
Well, first of all, what's a Sears? Because those barely exist today. I bet you half people listen have never even been in a Sears before.
Used to have a giant catalog, and
really?
that was used to how parents knew what kids wanted for Christmas. You give the kids the toy catalog, I mean, that sucker, I mean, the Christmas catalog, geez, Alex, I think that thing used to be an inch and a half, if not maybe 2 inches thick. I mean, it was a big deal to you know, as a kid to go through the toy catalog, Christmas catalog, or whatnot, and you point out the things that you want. And inevitably, you know, they had the NFL section in there, and you know, you could get. You didn't have much of a selection of a jersey. I think it was back when I was growing up, it was Franco Harris, number 32. And they didn't put names on them back then. It was just 32. And number 12, Bradshaw. I think Mean Joe Green, obviously, 75. I can't remember if 88 of Lynn Swann was available or not. But, I mean, that was it. And obviously, if you weren't, I mean, I'm sure in Pittsburgh, fans could get, you know, whatever choice they wanted from whatever pro shop or whatnot that the team had. But, boy, being out of town, especially way down in Florida, made it doubly tough. But back to the point here, as you can tell, I was pretty angry the other day about being old. about being old and not having the access that today's fans have, especially when it comes to merchandise. But back to the actual merchandise itself, the throwbacks ended up being, they're throwing back to the 78-79 season. That means more the block numbers, the block lettering, and I know there's a selection of the fan base that has been clamoring for that. David Todd, really not a big deal to him. Overall, it's not a big deal to me. I would have liked to have seen those old Batman jerseys, if you will, and perhaps at one point we will. But I think this season and next season, at least, we're going to be having the 78-79 kind of throwbacks, if you will, with those block numbers and obviously paying tribute to the championship teams of the 78-79 season.
Yeah, Dave, I like them a lot. I mean, I don't really care that much, but I think they're really sharp jerseys. You know, they're not obviously drastically different from what the Steelers wear today, but you do have the block number. The color scheme and design is a little bit different. I like them. I think they're sharp. People said they look like the Iowa Hawkeye jerseys, which is probably really true, but I like the Iowa Hawkeye jerseys. I like these ones, and they'll wear them, what, Week 8 against Cleveland, if you're wondering what game. It'll be the Week 8 against the Browns.
And I understand, I think they're still going to try to wear their Color Rush uniforms at least once as well, too. And like I said, I would expect these throwbacks to be worn once or maybe more than once during the 2019 season as well. All right, Tyler Matakavich is evidently still, I guess, getting more than his fair share of the first team reps. I think the biggest thing that we learned about Tyler Matakavich this week, David, is Alex.
Hi. the guy you've been working with for several years.
Yeah, you need to cough and yeah, type loudly and blow your nose. The biggest thing that we've learned this week about Tyler Matakavich is that shoulder injury of his, you know, didn't happen during the week 10 against the Bengals. Instead, I think it was the week 6 game against the Kansas City Chiefs. And now that we know that and went back and pulled the tape of that, that's when it happened.
Yeah, and it makes the Bengals injury makes sense about the Bengals injury now, because it was such an innocent play against Cincinnati where he just kind of got tapped basically by the lineman and then he just falls to the ground. You're figuring, how does that happen? But I guess it was just finally a breaking point for that injury, a shoulder injury that you can see it against Kansas City. It was I think it was the pass that Sean Davis wrestled away from the tight end and Matakavich leapt up for it and came down awkwardly and he's holding his arm. And so, yeah, looking back, it all makes sense about how kind of things happened. Now, to the present, you know, the fact that Matakavich is still running with the starters isn't a huge surprise. You know, Kevin Colbert said they want to find out exactly what they have in this guy. Obviously, they're high on Matakavich, and, you know, Bostic's still the new guy. He still has to learn the system and all that. You're not going to learn that just a couple weeks in, so it's not a surprise that Matakavich is still running ahead the way that, you know, most veteran guys on the team are going to, you know, run ahead of the new guys at this point of the offseason. But I still expect John Bostic to be week one starter and be the guy for the entire season.
How different would the playoff game against Jacksonville have been if Matakavich started?
It was a good discussion you and David Todd had last time. I'm not going to say the Steelers win that game, but I think that Shazier, and this is an obvious statement, but Shazier is going to have a noticeable and significant impact, and there's definitely a chance they would have won that game with Shazier out there instead of Sean Spence.
And our talk about Bostic and Shazier. Look, I mean, we don't expect Bostic to make the kind. Is there a, here's my view, my overall view on Bostic and Shazier. I think Bostic might, in the long run, be the better player against the run. Now, with that said, he's not going to give you those four-yard losses that Shazier would do four times a year, right? But as a whole, might Bostic be better against the run than Shazier?
Dave. I heard you say it last time. I cringed a little bit. I got to disagree with that 100%. I know what you're saying about consistency, but I think Shazier has become a lot more consistent against the run from where he was at his rookie year. Not a chance Bostic's going to be better against the run than Shazier in any facet.
I've watched quite a bit of his tape last year, and if we get the same player Bostic was last year with the Colts, you get the point that I'm not dismissing Shazier,
yeah.
Right?
Of course. Yeah, I get your point.
I mean, because Shazier can certainly, you know, there are some plays that Shazier's gone through some gaps to make some 2 and 3 yard drops that Bostic's not going to make. But I just think on a down-to-down basis in obvious run situations, I think Bostic can give you more consistency there.
I think he'll be consistent, but I think Shazier was getting pretty consistent too, and I think he was making just as many plays without having to shoot a gap as he was shooting the gap, making those plays off ball. I think Bostic will do a good job against the run, but I don't think it's going to be Shazier.
Okay. It'll definitely be something to chart for sure. Now, obviously, the big question is what happens in the passing situation with Bostic.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's going to be – yeah, it'll be a much bigger downgrade, you know, talking about Shazier to Bostic in the run versus Shazier to Bostic in the pass. The passing game's going to be the biggest concern. But, you know, I don't think Bostic's going to be terrible. This is a cover two guy. He was drafted by Chicago to play in a cover two system, a Tampa two system. He went to the Colts for the same thing. I mean, he has a lot of experience getting, you know, 20-yard depth, carrying guys down the seam. You know, he's not obviously anywhere really at Shazier's level in terms of making those impact plays, but there's a level of athleticism there that's probably not recognized by most people.
Here is the what's going to be the biggest test, I think. And look, I don't, you know, Shazier has not been perfect against the pass.
Sure. Nope.
Now, Bostic, here's the biggest thing that I think Bostic would want to see out of Bostic right out of the chute is impact plays. The negative yardage stops. Obviously, the interceptions or any forcing of turnover. Shazier had what, 3 interceptions and 2 forced fumbles last year? Does that sound right?
So that's
5 plays right there. What did he have? Like maybe 5 or 6 tackles for loss. I don't have it in front of me. Here with Shazier, had those, you know, add in whatever sacks, you know, impact plays, things that can turn, that can really change games, is going to be the big difference because Bostic just hasn't had those throughout his career.
Yeah, that's one of my top concerns with the Steelers defense. I wrote about it before the draft. I mean, they did obviously take Terrell Edmonds. But, yeah, just where are the impact splash plays coming from? Because you're losing Ryan Shazier that brought you so much of that. You know, you add guys like Bostic and Morgan Burnett who are fine, steady, consistent players with good communication and leadership skills, but they're not going to be that impact-type player. So where is that source? Who's going to be the guy to make a huge play? A forced fumble, a strip sack fumble, an interception, a tackle for loss when you need it. I have a little bit of a tough time trying to find that guy. And Shazier was able to kind of cover for everybody else so much because he was such a high impact player. But obviously, you know, who is that guy now? That's a lot tougher to say.
And you know, you here's something in the stat category too. I mean, there was the play that Ryan Shazier one of the Mike Hilton interceptions that Shazier really caused. Did he tip one or?
I'm sure he did. I can't remember.
I'm trying to remember if that was against Baltimore or when it was. But those kind of plays, those kind of things that don't even show up in the box score, you know, that you know, let's say a total of 13 plays, you know. Where are those 13 plays going to come from this year in this Steelers defense?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. That's one of my concerns. I mean, I think it's an excellent point. And even stuff like on the interceptions, like the Colts interception he had on that screen play where Shazier is diving for the football, and I don't know how in the world he catches it. He just kind of grabs behind him and snags it. I mean, that's a play that just, you know, very few guys can make. And how do you replace guys that can create that kind of impact and get you back into the game in a moment's notice?
Do you consider a stop for 0 yards an impact play?
No, I think I would consider it to be a loss to get in that stop category. I mean, it depends how you define it, but as an impact play, I think you need to have a loss.
Right. I would agree on that there. Now, also, the whole thing, too, I mean, you want being able to, on first and 10, hold the opponent to less than 4 yards, I think is big. So, you know, and that obviously gets into stops and all like that. I don't know. I got a feeling that my biggest concern is what they do in the sub package situations with Boston. I mean, obviously we're not going to see Vince Williams is not going to be on the field as much. We don't think this year. Right.
Well, I think it'll be about, that's a question of how much more dime do you think they're going to play? I think it'll be about the same amount of dime. I just think they'll be a lot more effective at it. So I think Vince will play about the same number of snaps.
Well, I think the biggest thing is those snaps. The snaps that Bostic is on the field against 11 in obvious passing situations are the ones that I think are really going to be analyzed.
Yeah, any passing situation, even dime, because Bostic, I assume, will be out there in dime as well. So, yeah, anytime he gets exposed in coverage or offenses try to expose him in coverage, that's going to make or break his ability to play at a high level for the Steelers defense.
All right, imagine that. We ran long today. You got anything else to say about this past week?
Heinz Field, ranked 5th best stadium. I think that's fair. I think it's a good ranking.
I haven't never been in it during a game, and I hope to never be in it during a game.
You hope to never be? Oh, I guess, yeah, during a game. But you got to get out there one time for.
I've been to a Pirates game, and it wasn't packed. So I don't think I can get to Heinz Field and not be packed. You know, so is it fair? I mean, obviously you haven't been to the stadiums across the league. I mean, is Fit too high? And isn't the guy that wrote that article for Sporting News a Steelers fan?
Is he? I don't even know if he is or not. No, I think 5 is fine. It's a beautiful stadium. I mean, it's a good location. It's nice. I wish it was louder. Do you feel like Heinz Field isn't loud enough sometimes? I feel like
What I think? I think Steelers fan, or I think Pittsburgh fans in general, don't do a great job in, you know, trailing, even strength. You know, that guy, I think the Steelers fans, now obviously you have the renegade situation, but it seems like they're only amped when they have the lead and stuff like that. I think Pittsburgh fans in general are not the best fans in stadium when it comes to trailing or even, you know, tight game situations.
Yeah, I think it needs to be a tougher place to play. I feel like it doesn't. It's not that level that it, like an Arrowhead. Like,
I think it can get loud. I mean, you know, certain renegade situations and stuff like that. I mean, it sounds like the proverbial roof's coming off the place, even though there is no roof. But I really, not just the Steelers fans. I mean, I think I've noticed this with the Penguins. And look, I mean, even if you can get the Pirates a packed house.
Luck.
You know what, Alex, I actually grew up during a time where you expected the Pirates to be in the playoffs year in, year out. I mean,
not blowing 8-5 leads like they did last night.
I actually grew up during a time where, man, it was a huge disappointment when the Pirates weren't in it. You know,
you had the We Are Family
group. Yeah, I mean, well, a little past that, you know, and on into there was just a sense, you know, year in, year out, that the Pirates are going to compete. And then, you know, after the late 90s, obviously, you know, where has it been since then? I really feel for, and I look, I grew up, was baseball my first love? No, not necessarily, but I mean, I played a lot of baseball, you know, when I was a kid. So obviously I collected, it was easier to get baseball cards than it was football cards back when I was growing up, you know, at the convenience stores and all like that. So I knew all about the Pirates right out of the chute, as far back as I can remember, 5, 6, 7. I have a large selection of Pirate baseball cards dating back to really back as far as, you know, the 60s and all. So I watched the games on TBS, and I watched the games on WGN anytime they play the Braves or the Cubs. I was front and center for the TV there. I would try to my best to tune in games, you know, out of market games, you know, if they were reasonably close to Florida on the radio. So I remember all that. But I mean, I remember growing up, and look, I'd read the box score every morning. So I could tell you what guys were batting back in the 70s and 80s when it came to the Pirates. I really feel for the diehard Pirates fans right now, especially ones that have never seen them win. And I guess that includes you, right?
Yeah, basically. I'm not the boycott the Pirates. You know, I'm not always happy with the moves that they make, but I still like watching the players. But last night was tough to watch them blow an 8-5 lead and lose it. It was a 10-8. That's a kick in the gut.
And look, I can date myself too. I can remember watching it. I can remember back when the Penguins weren't good. I can remember back to the pre-Mario days, even though I was an out-of-market kid. Because, you know, the old USA Today network used to always show the Rangers and the Islanders games on the weekend, you know. So in the dawn of cable, we had the USA network, and you could watch the Penguins play the Islanders or the Penguins play the Rangers. So it's amazing I didn't grow up a fan of the Rangers or the Islanders there. But I remember back when the Penguins were bad in the pre-Mario days and those type of things. Now, obviously, that, you know, as soon as Mario arrived, things really, really changed when it comes to there. But overall, you know, I just think Pittsburgh fans, sports fans in general, don't do a great job when it comes to the team being even strength or down. So let me, you know, I'm sure several people will take issue with me saying that. And if you do, make sure to let me know, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you take issue with anything or like anything that we said today on the podcast, email us, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter @SteelersDepot. You can follow my co-host David Todd @DavidMTodd. Follow Alex Kozora @Alex_Kozora. And if you like the show, want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. Alex, I appreciate you sitting in for David Todd on this Friday. We will talk to you soon. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.